Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com.
And you can also check us out. We podcast, you know, and you can go to our website at restaurantguysradio.com, and you can find out how to podcast and how to have our show sent to your computer or your iPod every time we put a new one up there. So go and do that. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Francis.
Today we have a very special guest going to be joining us starting in the second segment of the show, a woman named Blake Spaulding, who together with her partner Jennifer Castle has opened up one of the most unusual and exciting restaurants in the world in the middle of nowhere in Boulder, Utah, not Boulder, Colorado. And they have a pretty exciting restaurant, and they've written this amazing, it's not a cookbook, it's a book that's also a cookbook. It's great, and we're going to find out all about that later on. But first, why don't we talk about things a little closer to home?
How close?
Well, the wedding we went to this weekend.
Yeah.
We were guests at a wedding in our own restaurant this weekend, and I think weddings are great. And
I'm so happy. There's a whole world out there that's glad that you think weddings are great.
I hope to have one day myself. But being in the restaurant business gives you an interesting perspective on weddings.
Right.
And they're funny. I mean, weddings are amusing. All the weddings you've been to, everybody's got a funny wedding story.
Well, the thing is, most people go to 5, 10, 15, maybe 20 weddings, 30 weddings in their life.
We've been to hundreds of weddings.
Hundreds and hundreds of weddings. So, you know, frequently you don't know the person whose wedding it is. But
you don't know that different ethnic groups do the chicken dance differently, unless you live in New Jersey, in the cultural melting pot of New Jersey.
They do them differently.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the other thing is about weddings is they're a little harder on the restaurant.
On the physical plant.
Because, I don't know, people get a little crazy in weddings. I think that maybe people who don't usually go out to restaurants go out to weddings and
Like they do things like steal the cover off the thermostat, for instance.
Very bizarre.
What's up with that?
Because we don't do a lot of weddings.
If I come in the next morning, there's no cover on the thermostat.
At Stage Left, we do
a
lot of... What
are you going to do with that?
We do a lot of a la carte stuff. And this is a beautiful... tasteful, classic wedding we had this weekend with your friend
Except
of ours.
Except for the guy who stole the thermostat cover.
Just one of the guests. But we're like the creme de la creme of the weddings. People don't get out of hand, but everybody at a wedding, some brother-in-law, some distant relation gets out of hand.
Anytime you bring 150 people together into a room, somebody's going to act goofy.
So my favorite story for this weekend is our very able maitre d', Brian, came up to us and said, I noticed the bag next to the table, 22. And there's some of our silverware in it. And okay. I said, the man stole our silverware? He said, yes. I said, what'd you do? He said, I stole it back.
Here's my question, though, seriously.
Yeah. What do you do with one fork?
You're dumb enough to steal restaurant silverware, and then you're dumb enough to leave it in your open bag sitting next to you so that someone walking by say, hey, that looks like our knife.
That's mine. So he stole a butter cloche, a knife, a fork, and a spoon. What are you going to do with that? But anyway, so we stole it back, right? Rather than cause a scene, we just reached into his bag and we stole it back.
Yes, this is
but
a beautiful
this
story.
Is where it gets great.
This warms the cockles of my heart.
So the guy who's dancing comes back to the table, and we notice there's like an argument going on at the table. The guy who stole our silverware is accusing the guy sitting next to him of having stolen the silverware that he stole.
Stealing the silverware that he stole. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
That goes in the wedding annals. Okay, I have advice for people on weddings. Okay, I have strong feelings about certain things in weddings. Fountains should have water in them. Water. Got it? No whiskey sours.
Whiskey sour fountains.
Oh, my goodness gracious. No, and if you're not from Jersey and you're listening, you should come to a New Jersey wedding.
And do you know what the problem with a whiskey sour fountain is?
What?
No whiskey, no sour.
No. There's.
I'm sorry. Lots of sour.
Not a lot of whiskey. And the same is with the chocolate fountain. That's, we went to the restaurant show recently. And
you can't call it a chocolate fountain by law, Francis. You have to call it a chocolatey fountain.
Right. Because if you put real chocolate in it, it will coagulate and be disgusting. So why do you want to dip your strawberry in that?
So you put fake chocolate in it, and it doesn't coagulate and is disgusting.
But it's pretty. No, it's not. And the worst offender of all, tarantara, is the champagne fountain.
Oh, see, now, why you got to denigrate the champagne fountain?
Because champagne has bubbles in it
when
you put it into the fountain.
Yeah, it goes completely flat when you pour it like that.
That's just, who thought of that? There's a special room in hell for the
champagne fountain guy?
Yeah, and it's right next to the wedding DJ guy.
Oh, God.
The wedding DJ was really good this time, but Mark and I were at a wedding recently. Not one that we were hosting. It wasn't even in our place. It was elsewhere. And we knew we were in trouble. when the wedding DJ came out with the big funny glasses.
And the blow-up plastic guitar.
Yeah, and wanted everybody to play air guitar with a blow-up air guitar. We're against
but
that.
It's not really an air guitar if it's a blow-up plastic guitar. It's a blow-up, you're playing the blow-up plastic guitar.
I guess that's really... You know, I think that it's very hard because everyone has an ounce of tacky in them somewhere.
Some of us more than an ounce.
And especially if you're in Jersey, that ounce of tacky's coming out at your wedding.
Yep.
I mean, taffeta dresses, Olivia de Havilland shoulders, it's all coming out.
Gotta have the big shoulder pads.
Shoulder pads. My favorite story was when I was 20. And I was at a friend's wedding, people I'm still friends with, but it's enough in the past now that I can make fun of their wedding a little bit.
Excellent.
And the maid of honor was named Flo, and Flo walked down the aisle, and you know, Flo was giving the first reading. Catholic Church, you know me, Irish Catholic boy.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic Church, you know, cathedral, incense, stained glass, organ, right? So Flo goes up to the lectern, and she says, and she's chewing gum. Right, and I noticed she's walking down the aisle and she's chewing gum.
Didn't the priest ever tell you no gum in church?
Oh, my goodness, you get wrapped, but not if you're the bridesmaid, I guess. What's it going to do?
It gets all mucked up with the host when you have the host. So
she goes up to the lectern, and she's about to do the reading. And she says, this is a reading from St. John. And she looks around, and she realizes she's got gum in her mouth. So she takes the gum out of her mouth and sticks it on the lectern. She then does the reading, takes the gum off the lectern, puts it back in her mouth.
Well, you can't leave it there. It's church.
I wanted to applaud. I am from Jersey, and I'm proud. So there's my wedding story. But I think weddings are great. And one thing that I want to caution people when they go out to book a wedding, especially if you're young people out there and looking to book a wedding, especially in Jersey, lots of charlatans out
there. Right. Beware the add-on. That's really one of the things
I mean,
that
white glove service,
about.
And also there are all sorts of ways to get your money out of you. There's all sorts of ways to, oh, yeah, your wedding's going to cost $70 a person, and it winds up costing $150.
Right. People are trying to take advantage of the fact that you're trying to make it a very, very special day.
And
what they'll do is they'll continue these little add-ons. Well, you know, you got to have the rack of lamb.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they bring out 20 pieces of lamb and charge you $500.
And so be very, very careful. Hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to talk about some more universal topics with Blake Spaulding and Jennifer Castle, authors of the book With a Measure of Grace and owners of Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:50. Hey, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we have with us today a couple of very special guests. They're the authors of a beautiful book called With a Measure of Grace, which is probably the best book I've written about food and wine in a while.
Did I say written? Yeah, you did.
I'm envious. They also are the owners of Hell's Backbone Grill, which is a very unusual restaurant in Boulder, Utah. Hello, Blake and Jennifer.
Hi, Francis and Mark.
Hey, ladies, how are you today?
All right, who's Jennifer? Who's Blake?
I'm Jennifer.
I'm Blake.
That's easy. Okay, how you doing, guys? Thanks for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to talk with us.
Yeah, you live in Boulder, Utah, so we've never come out to visit you.
I know, you have to come.
I'm going
to
get on my Harley and come out there at some point.
A lot of people get on their Harleys and come to visit us, actually.
In your book, I was very taken by the one picture of a Tibetan llama sitting on a Harley Davidson outside your restaurant. And I thought, there's a place I got to visit. He didn't ride that in, right? That was just in the parking lot?
Just checking him out.
How do you get a llama on a Harley Davidson?
Very carefully.
Let me fill people in a little bit on what you guys have done out there before we talk about the book. They have gone to Boulder, Utah, population 180. While at the same time the population is 180, it's the largest town geographically in Utah after Salt Lake. It is, by your description, a remote, tiny, tightly knit community, most of whom are Mormon ranchers. One of the country's least accessible towns, and the last to receive regular service mail service by mule train. And that just sounds like a perfect place to go and open up a restaurant.
It's a really big little town.
That's, you know, because I'm thinking demographic studies, perfect. You got 180 people. What are you doing?
Recipe for success.
Yeah. Let's see. There are 180 people within 40 miles of us, and they don't drink.
So what in the world prompted you? Now, I know I have a little insight this because I read your book, but I'd rather have it from you guys initially. Tell people what prompted you to go and open a restaurant in the middle of, well, nowhere.
Well, basically, It is the middle of nowhere, as you say, but it's actually, in truth, the middle of everywhere, because it's right in between Capitol Reef National Park and Bryce National Park,
mm-hmm.
Equidistant between, and it's on the grounds of a really beautiful lodge. And Jen and I just, I don't know how to explain it. I've been thinking about this book called Blink lately, if you've heard about it, where you have the ability to make split-second decisions because you've downloaded all this information your whole life. We didn't even have that many discussions about it. We just kind of decided to do it. And it was really based on a hunch that it would work. And Jen and I just, there was no fine dining really anywhere for a long ways. And both Jen and I have traveled a lot, you know, separately, but to all these different countries. And, you know, if you love food, you'll really go far to have something special. And that was kind of the premise that we started the restaurant on, was that people were coming to this part of the world to see the scenic, beautiful scenic things, the parks and the monuments and all this. But there was nowhere really for them to eat. And generally, people that go to places like that are really sophisticated travelers. And if I felt like, both Jen and I felt that if there was somewhere where they could eat and taste the flavor of the region, you know, sort of like how it goes in Italy, then we would succeed.
How did you find the place? Had you visited that before on your own?
Yes.
Just
and it was basically standing vacant. The building, the restaurant building, and Jen and I had no money and only just a lot of restaurant experience, and it had been my dream for ages to have a restaurant, and so they were kind of like free restaurant, you know, because they were so desperate to have somebody have a restaurant in there to be the hearth for the lodge,
mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you know, we can give it our best shot, and I think if anyone can pull it off, it would be Jen and I, because we both had a lot of experience cooking really remotely, you know, and so kind of our thing was, well, you know, at least there's electricity and running water, you know, how hard can it be?
We had no idea.
So let me get this straight. No money and you really wanted to open a restaurant. That story sounds familiar, doesn't it, Francis?
That sounds like us. Except we chose the middle of an urban center in New Jersey.
We decided to pick a town where there were 50,000 people.
Right, exactly. We just had to convince them. They were all going to eat somewhere. We had to just convince them where to come. Hey, listen, Jen, there's something you wrote in your book that I thought was really great that you wrote in the book, Jen. You said, when you were making the decision as to whether to do this or not, you were 30, 31, something like that. And in making your decision, you thought, you know, fail and I'd still succeed. Succeed and I'd be a success. And I thought, you know, how tremendous is that? I mean, that's a great philosophy on the whole thing. So have you been a success? And how do you define success?
That's a big one, isn't it?
Well, you got 2.5 minutes.
Oh, golly. I'm sure that's fine. Well, it was definitely a leap of faith, but I said, nothing to lose, really. I do feel like it's been a success because we've built some incredible relationships. I've lived in a place I never could have imagined living, and I like it. You know, it's not just living in the middle of nowhere and struggling. It's struggling with a bunch of good friends and having happy diners every single night who end up coming back and being our friends, and the ranching communities that we've forged relationships with, and the food purveyors, even if they're the once a week or once a month,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is somebody we have to bribe with a dinner and $50 to come all the way. and now he's our buddy and doesn't make us pay and sits down and enjoys his time with us, and things have just really matured in a pretty beautiful way that I can't regret a minute of it.
You know, one of the
definitely
things
definitely feels like a success.
One of the things that I want to recommend this book. The book is called A Measure of Grace, and we're talking with Blake Spaulding and Jennifer Castle, who wrote the book and who are also owners of Hell's Backbone Grilled in Boulder, Utah.
And it really is a beautiful book.
And
we actually self-published too, because Jen and I like to do everything the hard way.
Really hard.
Did you really self-publish? I didn't realize that.
We really did.
Well, a lot of the self-published books out there are of low quality. This is a beautiful book. This could be a coffee table book. This works as a cookbook, but it's also a book about how a restaurant is a part of community. How this restaurant became sort of a locus of this community, and you went from being outsiders to being insiders. And I think that it's very interesting because restaurants all across America are places where people come together for a meal, and it becomes a locus of community if a restaurant has any utility at all. And for us to do this, that's always been our driving force in New Brunswick, New Jersey, you know, and in the restaurants we consult for in New Jersey and New York. But it's amazing to see how you guys went from being outsiders into a Mormon rancher community and sort of made it your own, or made you their own.
Well, we made it our home,
mm-hmm.
you know, first and foremost. And I think from the very beginning, Jen and I, you know, kind of approached it like we were moving almost to a foreign country.
Uh-huh.
And so instead of going to Boulder with this pre-set notion of how we were going to make it work for us, we went kind of in a more respectful and humble mode.
I want to talk with you more about that and the relationships you forge and how you make things work with employees there and how you become part of the community when we come back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Blake Spaulding and Jennifer Castle, authors of A Measure of Grace and owners of Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today, we have the honor of talking to the authors of a book called With a Measure of Grace, Blake Spaulding and Jennifer Castle, who are also the owners of a great little restaurant called Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah. Jennifer and Blake, I need to tell you that I have to ask the questions at the beginning of the segment because Francis is so excited about talking to you two that he won't let me talk the whole rest of the segment. So I have to get the first question in.
I think I have a crush on both of you. A food crush.
So we were talking just a minute ago about how you kind of worked your way into the Mormon community. Now, obviously, that's a very tight-knit community of which you didn't have a lot of ties. How did you get yourself into that community?
Well, it started just by working really hard. I mean, in the ranching, a kind of an agrarian community, I think that's like the highest compliment anyone can pay another person is, oh, they work really hard. Mm-hmm. And Jen and I were basically at the restaurant from like 6:30 every morning until midnight every night. And so they were like, ooh, they work really hard. So that might have been the first thing. And then Jen and I both like to have parties. And so the very first thing we did when we opened the doors before we had actual customers was
And everyone knows the Mormons really like to party.
Well,
you saw the old Donnie and Marie show.
Actually, they are very celebration-oriented.
Excellent. Uh-huh.
You know, not with alcohol, but yeah, they do actually like to party. And so,
do they wear purple socks?
That's a Donny Osmond joke for those of you who didn't get it.
I don't know. Right.
Donny used to wear purple socks on the show. I'm sorry, I'm being ridiculous. Talk to us about how you did, how you brought them together through celebration.
So, well, we had an open house, and we just invited the whole town to come and eat dinner, you know, to eat at the restaurant, and we made tons and tons of food, and it was free. So that was the first thing we did. And
we
that
showed up at 6 o'clock on the dot.
And we didn't know if anyone would come, but there was a line. It was wonderful.
Really?
Yeah. And not everybody came, but a lot of people came, and that was the start of it. And then that July 4th, we had an ice cream social. Where we bought, you know, a lot of ice cream and made all these toppings and basically made a free sundae for everyone and gave it away. And that everybody came to, and it was amazing. And the mayor of the town said, you know, I've never seen so many Boulder people all in one place together. Because actually our town is predominantly Mormon, but there's a very strong non-Mormon population too, and sometimes it can be fractious. And so this really brought everyone together, and it's a tradition we've continued. So we had our sixth 4th of July ice cream social. Yep. Now it has a talent show and fireworks, and it gives this big party for the town. But
there's really nobody who doesn't like ice cream.
Ice cream brings everybody together.
We'll be right back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:30.
Send Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com.
And we encourage you to go to restaurantguysradio.com and download all of these shows and hook them up to your computer. We have today with us two very special guests, the authors of the most exciting book that I've read in months, about food and wine. The book is called With a Measure of Grace. We have with us Blake Spaulding and Jennifer Castle. They also own Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah, Population 180, which is an amazing restaurant, and this is an amazing book. Welcome back, ladies.
Hello.
Thank you.
You know, we were talking before the break about how, you know, you went out and did this very unusual thing. And, you know, owning a restaurant anywhere is crazy. Owning a fine dining restaurant is more crazy. You guys are really, really crazy out in the middle of the country like that. And you talk about the work. Now, one of the things that you talk about is running your restaurant by Buddhist principles. And I want to get into that a little bit further on. A little bit more later, but what I think is interesting about what we were talking about earlier with the work and how working so hard helped you to become part of the community. There's a chapter written by, and this book is amazing. It's a cookbook, but it's also a book about life, a book about how a restaurant's part of a community, and it's a book about food. In the chapter written by your ex-employee, Abigail Sullivan, she talks about coming specifically to work with you. And I think finding employees is interesting how you do that, and finding them in the community, like kidnapping bikers as they drive through your town. But you talk a lot about in the book, and she talks in that chapter, how it's all about the work. She came for work as a spiritual medium, the work as a locus of respect, the work as a center of community, the work as redemptive. Do you think this is more true in your restaurant than in most, about the work being so central, about the hard work itself being the point in a way?
I think that it's universally applicable for restaurants. You know, to be successful in a restaurant, there has to be a passion that goes beyond just sort of showing up and punching your time clock. You know, we still have the occasional employees that come, and that's what they're there for, and they don't last because it is really hard. We maybe work a little bit harder, you know, but I can't even necessarily say that. And both Jen and I have a lot of restaurant experience. What do you think, Jen?
Well, we're really committed. We're in a community where these people live either in our homes or next door to us. We party with them at night, you know, the non-Mormon way, and we work with them all day, and we breakfast with them the next morning. And so we do have a deeper investment, I think, than most employer-employee
It might
situations.
Be more akin to like a family-run restaurant, but we
piece
our family
or
together. And then, but the people, like, in the community that work with us also, you know, it's we have a very diverse staff. We have about 30 people on staff, and we have, you know, the LDS people, Mormon. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, young kids. We've got, you know, older people. We have, you know, I could go on and on. But it's very diverse, but the work is what makes everything cohesive. It bonds everybody. And, you know, we tell people when they come to work there that basically it has to be a passion, that if they're just there, you know, to make some money, it's not going to be a good fit, and they'll end up not being happy.
Mm-hmm. I think you guys maybe are being a little bit humble as far as this question goes, because I do think that sometimes it is much easier to run a formulaic restaurant, to run a chain style restaurant, than it is to run this type of restaurant that is your spirit, that is your heart and soul, that you put everything into.
Yeah, it's painful.
Yeah, it is painful.
It's like childbirth.
It's like a heartbreaking every day.
Yes, it's like childbirth, I think, is what it is. You know, one of the things that is interesting about the work is, I mean, and we obviously run a closely held business that Mark and I run every day. We also have our third partner, Lou, who's involved. And it really is, and that chapter really struck me because, I mean, people can make a good living working for us. But it's not just about that. And like you said, people are never happy if they're coming to work in a restaurant and it's just about the paycheck. I think maybe you can be an investment banker or work in an investment banking firm and sort of show up and do your job and go home and not particularly care that much about what happens. But there's something about restaurant people, and we have a diverse group of people as well. But I think it's a people, what drives them is that they want to see the fruits of their labor at the end of the day. You know what I mean?
Francis, I think, too, that everybody, and maybe this gets back to the Buddhist roots, but everybody wishes principally to have a life that's meaningful.
Yes.
Right? That's kind of the basis for all of humanity. We want our life to have meaning, and we're always asking, how can I get more meaning?
Yes.
And so to give people work that has meaning, you know, where they feel like they're part of something larger, you know, we have a mission that doesn't have much to do with making money.
Right.
And so that's why people come back year after year and give us their hearts and their souls and you know, work themselves to the bone to make it happen. I think that that's what it basically comes down to.
But at the same time, the difference between being good and very good, and I say this to the people that I'm interviewing all the time, is relatively small as compared to the difference between being very good and to excellent. And to be excellent takes a lot of extra effort. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of passion. It takes a lot of commitment. And honestly, I find that most people are not willing to give what it takes to be excellent.
And are satisfied to be good or very good.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know what I think is also interesting about the way that you guys have set up your restaurant, and I can't believe this book was Prose published. It was self-published because it's just a beautiful book, and we're going to put it up on our website, and we're going to try and sell a lot of books for you.
You are so cute.
Oh, I am.
You're not looking at them, okay?
Faces made for radio is what my partner and I have. But it's okay. I'm in the restaurant and the radio. It doesn't matter what I look like. But the way that you put it together, I often find people who have, I mean, you know, and around here I'll find people who have principles that are sort of what I call pie in the sky. Like, oh, we want our restaurant to change the world and be socially relevant and do all this. And you know what your restaurant's going to do? It's going to go out of business because you're so disdainful of business and the business of making it work on as a, you know.
Well,
you can, if you support a sustainable.
Sustainability, you have to be able to sustain yourself.
Exactly. I talk to people all the time who, you know, because we're very into sustainable agriculture, supporting the family farm, all that stuff. But I say, you know, if you open a restaurant and your mission is to help sustain family farmers, but you don't make money, you're not sustaining anybody, you know,
exactly.
If you can't make a living at it.
Yeah, it's really kind of nuts and bolts. That's the very basic foundation. And then right up from there, I think, is relationships.
Yeah.
You know, if you're constantly... My dog is barking.
That's right. We kind of like that. Gave a little flavor to the show.
Yeah.
That's Tashi. She's in the book.
Yeah, exactly. It's all part of the oral landscape. Go ahead.
But if you don't have solid relationships with people, if you're constantly training new staff, if your guests aren't returning, if your community doesn't like you, then you can't be sustainable either. You have to really put an enormous amount of effort into creating solid relationships with people
in order
to be truly sustainable.
I also say, and we do a lot of restaurant consulting, and our first advice to new clients who comes in is we always say, okay, first advice, don't do this.
Go someplace else. Do something else.
Say, you know, we're $125 an hour. For $125, you're out. You're free. You're done.
And my business is sustainable.
But of course, they never listen. And the interesting thing is how you, though, talk about how you made the transition from, you say, you know, we had to change our head around from, we like to throw a dinner party and give the food away because that's what our inclination is, and then we realized we had to make a business out of it. And that's what I think a lot of people miss.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but you and I did start, Francis, by throwing really good dinner parties. That is really how it all began,
that's
isn't
exactly
it?
Right. They were a lot more fun. Hey, listen, we're going to talk more, just so everyone in the audience knows who we're talking to. It's Blake Spaulding and Jennifer Castle who've written the amazing book called With a Measure of Grace, and they're also the owners of Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah, Population 180. This is one of the most interesting books written on food in a long time, and you can find out more about it. We're going to put a link up there this afternoon on our website, which is www.restaurantguysradio.com, and we're going to talk more with them in just a minute. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Blake Spaulding and Jennifer Castle, who are the authors of an amazing book called With a Measure of Grace that you're going to go to our website later on and buy and read it at home and tell all your friends. And they also own Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah. Population 180 sounds like the most difficult place in the world to open a restaurant and run a restaurant, especially for a couple of chicks with an urban sensibility, it seems like you have as well, universal people. You talked about forging the relationships and finding help and running this, you know, noted restaurant in this unusual place. The wonderful thing about this book is you profile the people in your community with the restaurant at the center. You talk about the person who forages for you, the person who raises your beef and where everything comes from. What made you decide to make this book more a profile of people than a cookbook?
I can go there. People every day would come to the restaurant and kind of freak out that they're in the middle of nowhere, and not only is there food, but it's super yummy. And wonder, you know, how did you get here is the first question. How did you get here? Why on earth? Why Boulder, et cetera?
I was kind of thinking maybe you just got tired and stopped.
On your way to somewhere else.
You were going someplace and said, oh, boy.
That's it. I've had enough. So people, they want the story, and we thought, well, this would eliminate a few conversations every day, which didn't really work.
Yeah, because you sound like people who don't really like to talk to people very much. You're very fly on the wall. I'm kidding. Totally kidding.
Right. So at first, we thought, well, let's talk about our lovely meat guy or our lovely egg guy or whatever, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger. You can't leave out the Ryans. You can't leave out the Davises, because these people have been instrumental in our growth and our success and just our happiness there. And so it was a really easy natural progression to start including these other folks.
You know, I think I recommend this book as a cookbook. I mean, this is a book that you should have and keep in your kitchen, and it should be dog-eared, because the recipes are very simple, to be honest with you, and very, you know, lovely. The food is great, and it's got pictures. It's got everything you want in an easy reference cookbook. And it's great, but it also has this other story to it. And one of the things that I think is so interesting is Mark and I, when we were 25 years old or 24 years old, figuring out what to do with our lives, experimenting in some other careers, we said, you know, we want to open a restaurant, but we want that restaurant, whatever it is. We looked at a sports bar, we looked at an Irish tavern, we looked at Italian restaurants up in North Jersey, and we said, whatever it is, it's got to be a locus of community. It's got to be something that gets people to turn off the television and come out and talk to each other and share a meal. And you guys have made it a locus of community, and what we found out since we've been in the restaurant business is there's a community that extends to the farmer, that extends to the winemaker. You talk about Randall Graham, who's a friend of ours who makes wine out in California. Yeah, he's pretty cool, huh? Smartest winemaker in the world.
A really nice letter. We sent him the book, and he sent us a beautiful letter. We're going to frame it. We were so happy.
I have to share it with you all something. Randall, I think he was a Rhodes Scholar. He's a great, he's a very intelligent
guy. Super intelligent.
I'm not sure if I'm right. He's been on the show. And Randall writes this newsletter.
A little bizarre.
A little bizarre.
Super intelligent.
And he writes this newsletter that I need to get my dictionary and my thesaurus out to, like, to read his newsletter. He's pretty smart.
I think for me, what I really enjoy about the book is the passion that you guys put into everything that you do. And, you know, bringing things from your backyard to the table and enjoying it with people, that for me was the biggest part of this book that struck a chord with me. And I love the recipes and I love the pictures, but it's that passion that kind of comes through in every page. But it doesn't just come through on every page. It comes through from the people that you've surrounded yourself with. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear it in their words and you understand that you are part of that community.
Do you find that a lot of people come to town to work for you now? Because there are a couple of people in your book who came to town to work for you. Does that happen often?
Let this be an open call.
Yeah, we're hiring. Yes and no. I mean, we are always short-staffed.
Uh-huh.
Because we don't have a lot of housing, so people have to be willing to be pretty creative and flexible. But we have, a core staff of people who come back every year and who actually consider themselves Boulder residents now, but they travel in the winter when we're closed.
There's a great chapter in the book called How'd You Ever Find This Place, written by Tomaline Evans, who's an employee of yours. She works as a server. Everyone should know that she was on a mountain biking trip and her clutch blew, and she had to spend a week in Boulder, and she met you guys, and then...
I hypnotized her.
And she went back to where she was living.
We do what it takes to get good employees.
She went back to where she was living, packed up the truck, and moved to Boulder, Colorado, population...
Boulder, Utah.
Boulder, Utah, sorry, population 180, middle of the desert. Now, the place obviously has an allure for some people because it is so isolated. Do you think
and it's so beautiful. I mean, that kit really can't be understated. It's paradise, basically, here. I mean, it's a stunningly beautiful place.
All of your employees write, and all of the families of your employees write, and all of your purveyors write about how you guys really do provide a way for people to come together in that beautiful place, which is so vast and so
unpopular. We're committed to a living wage for our employees,
right?
You know, which is kind of, you know, people, I had some fancy restaurant consultant guy look at our books last year because I was like, okay, we need some help.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, well, you need to cut wages. And I was like, that's never going to happen. And he said, well, then you need to cut food costs. And I said, that's not really going to happen either. So, like, what else?
Did he come up with anything? Because I'd like to hire this guy if he came up with something else.
He had a few suggestions. He said raise prices, which we did. And that I was really scared, but no one's even blinked. So that was good.
Well,
and that helped us.
You know, how did the community out there react? Because you said earlier on that you went out to this place where there wasn't really any fine dining, and there wasn't even a history of fine dining, and it wasn't in the background at all. How did people react to you coming into the town? Were they super enthusiastic about finding this, you know, amazing world-class restaurant right in their midst?
Not locals. They weren't
thrilled.
The locals,
no. But yes, right away, our guests, you know, people would stumble upon us, and they'd be like, you've got to be kidding. They were happy. You know, and the locals now, they come, you know, for special occasions. They'll come for Mother's Day or for birthdays or when they have visitors from out of town.
They were wary because the restaurant had been under two or three owners before us or supervisors or something. And
that hadn't had a community.
Didn't go well.
Community.
They were always hiring and firing and, you know.
And, in fact, I think when the restaurant opened, they said that locals weren't allowed to come. You had to be staying at the lodge.
That's very nice. That's very homey.
That's gonna slow you down a little.
We had a lot to overcome.
We did.
I would love it if you guys, I've enjoyed talking to you so much, and there's so much more in this book, and I want to talk about the food and the recipes, and I want to talk about the way you garden and the way you raise so much of your own food there. Will you come back and join us again tomorrow?
I would be honored.
Oh, terrific. That'd be great. Okay.
Terrific. This has been a pretty quick hour, huh?
Well, it's a date. My God. Just so everyone knows, thank you so much for joining us today. This is Blake and Jennifer. It's been a superb hour, and we look forward to talking with you more again tomorrow.
It's going to be great tomorrow.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay, talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, that was Blake Spaulding and Jennifer Castle, who wrote this fabulous book called With the Measure of Grace, and they're the owners of Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah, population 180. They're going to come back on the show tomorrow, and we're going to talk about how they raise much of their own food, how they put up food in the summertime for the next year.
It's really interesting, and hopefully some of you get the book before tomorrow's show so you can really get a beautiful look.
Follow along.
Exactly.
You can, like a missile, you were raised Catholic, weren't you? You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal, Francis Schott from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And if any of you all are interested out there in farmers, farming, local produce, we are at the height of the season right now, and we are having a farmer dinner, which is going to be a week from this coming Wednesday, at the restaurant. We're having a bunch of local farmers from whom we source come to the restaurant with their produce, and it's all Jersey all the time. It's going to be really fabulous. It's $125 with wine included. Mm-hmm. So you can check that out at restaurantguysradio.com, or you go to stageleft.com, or call 732-828-4444. People ask us often, and we've been getting a lot of emails, oddly from all over the world, and we want you to keep those emails coming. We really love to get emails from you guys.
That's great.
And people have asked a number of questions. We've sent back emails, but we're also going to answer some of those questions on the air in the coming weeks. So that'll be a regular segment of the show. So please email us, francis@restaurantguysradio.com, mark@restaurantguysradio.com. And we'll get back to you on that. And
yeah, email me if you want the right answer.
And this interview came about as an email suggestion that we pick up this book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually from
Rosie Saperstein. Yep.
And so we want to thank her for putting this on. These ladies are great. Come back and talk to them tomorrow.
Yeah. So I do have to tell you a funny story. Something happened in the restaurant just last night.
Yeah.
I walk up to a table, and they're in the bar room, and they're you know, having, I don't want to say light fare, but our
bar menu.
And the guy's from Tennessee, And he turns and he says, I'll have a, and I'm not going to do a Tennessee accent.
But. No, you're not. Whatever that was you were doing.
But he says, I'll have a burger. Waiter goes, cheese, bacon, yes, 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 I'll have, I want everything. Just do me a favor, no tomato. I turn to the guy.
You're Italian from Jersey.
Now I'm listening. Now I'm listening to the conversation. I have not been participating. I turn to the guy. I'm like, no tomato? You're from Tennessee. You're in New Jersey in the height of tomato season. This is it. This is the time to get a tomato. Tomatoes now is the time. Everybody loves tomatoes now.
And so what did he say?
So he turns to the waiter. He goes, okay, I'll have a burger with cheese and bacon, medium rare, and my tomato on the side for him.
That's funny.
Well, he could tell I was really, really excited about the tomato.
You know, can we end this on a pet peeve?
Oh, golly, don't we usually?
I just want to end on a pet peeve.
Go ahead.
In the height of tomato season around here, and this is a word, it's not a pet peeve, it's a word of advice to restaurateurs out there.
It goes right into pet peeve, doesn't it?
I go to these restaurants sometimes, and they'll have the heirloom tomato salad. Now, these beautiful heirloom tomatoes, right? But then you'll have a burger or something, you'll have the other salad, and it will have these, like, number 10 tomatoes from Guatemala on
right.
there.
That might have actually come out of a can.
No, I know what you mean. But they're they're the cheap tomato. They cost no more
at this time of year. Right, they cost about 20 cents a pound more.
Let me tell you something about these tomatoes. You know, we worship the tomato. I love the tomato. Mm. But put it on your burger.
Right.
Put it in your salad. Use these things. This is what tomatoes are supposed to taste like.
Jennifer and I made, Sunday night, we made BLTs. But
'tis the season for the BLT.
Just the most awesome tomatoes in the whole world. We use the Amish bacon from the Amish market down not too far from here on Route 27. Spectacular.
And listen, everybody, don't refrigerate tomatoes. 55 degrees is perfect. Pick them ripe. If you have a cool place to put them in, that's fine. You can throw a little cheesecloth over them to keep the fruit flies out. But don't refrigerate tomatoes. It eats up all the flavor. That's our advice from the restaurant guys, the Jersey boys who love tomatoes here. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Chad.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.